Hello, this is Mr. Brewer. You are listening to our classroom project we call Forgotonia. On this edition, we dig into the history of our namesake. Our school in Cuba, Illinois is part of Fulton County, one of 16 counties in western Illinois that people sometimes refer to as Forgotonia. But just how many people know the story of how we came to be called Forgotonia? We were shocked by the number of people in our own community who have never heard this story. As we'll demonstrate, this is more than a story, it's a movement. But is a new movement in rural Illinois happening today? And how does it compare to the original? We'll ask these questions and more as we sit down with Canton Daily Ledger's own Larry Eskridge. We're excited to welcome you to this Forgotonia project. With me today is Avonlea Strait. She's a senior here at Cuba High School. Avonlea, thanks for being on. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, my favorite subject in school would have to be math. My favorite school food is definitely Chicken Nugget Day.
Chicken Nuggets.
And my favorite sports team is the Chicago Cubs.
All right, awesome. Thank you. Avonlea. Let me ask you this. Have you ever heard of Forgotonia before we did this project?
Nope. Never have I ever.
Yeah, a lot of people haven't. And I'm actually been teaching in Cuba for 11 years. And originally, I'm from up north. So I hadn't heard of Forgotonia until one time I saw it on the History Channel. They have a show called How the States Got Its Shape. If you haven't seen it, we actually put a link to the show on our ForgotoniaProject.com website. So it's an interesting story. It captivated me, and I had to learn a little bit more about it.
But our thing is that it's not about the past, right? There's a lot about this that relates to what's going on today.
Exactly. Forgotonia was more than just an interesting story that happened in the early 70s. It was a movement. And it was a movement that was centered in rural America, specifically the 16 counties in western Illinois. So our premise is, hey, what if this movement wasn't dead? What if it's the same? Or what if it's different? And we might not realize it, but rural America is kind of in vogue right now.
Okay, hang on a sec. Mr. Brewer, what is in vogue?
In Vogue is a sweet R&B group from the early 90s that you should check out because they're cool. But in vogue means that something is of a heightened interest, like when Harlem was in vogue during the 1920s, or facial hair is probably in vogue right now. People are studying rural America today because they believe we were the deciding factor in the presidential election of 2016.
So rural America's voted for Donald Trump, is that what you're saying?
Well, it's not just me saying this, but the data, which reveals a growing divide between rural and metro areas. According to exit polls by the New York Times, NBC, and CNN, Republicans received 62% of the vote in 2016, up from 53% in 2008. In fact, Republicans earned 71% of the votes in towns that were less than 2,500.
So basically, the smaller your town, the more likely they voted Republican?
Yeah. And the further away you are from a big city, the more likely you voted Republican in 2016.
So how did our county and other counties in Forgotonia vote in 2016?
You'll hear me plug this a lot, actually, because it is pretty unique. But all 16 counties in Forgotonia voted for Donald Trump. And it's rare for all 16 counties to have this much consensus when choosing a president. For reference, in 2008, Barack Obama carried 9 of the 16 counties, and John McCain had 7. Something is definitely resonating in Forgotonia that we simply want to learn more about.
I have to ask, Mr. Brewer, aren't we going to bore listeners if we keep talking about politics?
I know, good point. But the purpose of our project, it's not about endorsing a candidate or anything like that. And we certainly don't want to bore people with politics. Our purpose is we want to learn about this place that we call home in rural America. And it's a time that we call Forgotonia. And who are we? What are our values? And how are these values changing? What things in our past shape us, and what does our future hold?
Okay, so what's going on right now in Forgotonia?
That is a great question worth researching further. And it's one concept that we're going to continually demonstrate in this podcast, is that there's always more than one contributing factor. While I don't have the best answer to your question, Catherine Kramer, a political science at the University of Wisconsin, gives a tremendous answer about what she perceives is happening in rural America. There's this sense that people are not getting their fair share compared to people in the cities. They feel like their communities are dying, and they perceive that all the stuff, the young people, the money, the livelihood, is going somewhere, and it's going to the cities.
They feel like they're being forgotten?
Exactly. They feel forgotten. And since this is similar to how we felt in 1971, perhaps it's time to rediscover the original Forgottonia movement.
To help us tell this story, we sat down with Larry Eskridge, most known from his work in Canton, Illinois. Larry has worked there for 23 years and has lived in Forgottonia his whole life. High school students throughout Fulton County would likely recognize Mr. Eskridge because he covers the area extensively. You do not want to see the gas money he spends covering various events over the years. He is a regular at most of our schools, and his work is greatly appreciated. Listen in as Mr. Eskridge shares with us his insights into the Forgottonia story.
People, if you've ever seen one of those funny little maps, when you ask people what Illinois is, they say it's Chicago. And the map of Illinois that I've seen, it had Chicago, and it had pretty much all the state. And then there's a little bitty strip at the end that says Southern Illinois. And that's how people see Illinois. And that's what the people in Forgottonia decided to argue. There was actually another commercial made years ago. It's just outside Chicago. There's a place called Illinois, which I'm not going to sing. But it was about how, you know, when you talk about Illinois, people see Chicago, and that's all they see. And so many people downstate were tired of, say, we pay our taxes, you know, we're part of the state, and yet nothing gets done unless Chicago wants it. And they felt like they were paying their taxes and they were doing what they were supposed to do, but everything went up to Chicago, and anything that happened in Illinois was an afterthought. School funding is a big issue. The idea that the suburbs of Chicago liked the way the state funds the education and the rest of the people didn't, but they don't care because they have enough representatives in the legislature that it didn't matter what, if everybody in downstate Illinois voted for one thing, but the Chicago and the collar counties voted against it, it got defeated. And so they were tired of that. That's why they decided to bring Forgottonia up.
The name of Forgottonia was created by Jack Horn, son of civically minded Coca-Cola regional bottler Frank Pappy Horn, John Armstrong, a Combe Chamber of Commerce board member, Neil Graham at WIU, theater student and graduate of VIT High School.
Like most locals, the three men were frustrated with the lack of support from the state for transportation and infrastructure projects in the region. Rather than a phone call to a local legislator or picketing in the state capitol, they took a less traditional route to voice their frustration. They used humor. They declared the 16-county region in western Illinois to be its own state, thus seceding from Illinois. This state would be called Forgottonia, and Neil Gam, a recent veteran of Vietnam, would be its new governor.
A small town just south of Colchester called Fandon was chosen as the capital with an empty building considered the capital building. The state flag was an all-white surrender flag. The idea would help them generate attention that Gam's vintage suit, bow tie, and crazy antics were a hit. The trio traveled to recognizable places in Forgottonia, like the Burning Dot Bridge, and took pictures of Neil Gam as the governor of Forgottonia, holding a sign declaring independence.
To say the idea was a hit would be a drastic understatement. News of their endeavor was so widespread that newspapers in Sacramento, Philadelphia, and even the New York Times covered it. Imagine how popular it would have been in today's social media frenzy.
If social media was present, it probably would have gotten bigger. It was really considered a joke by most people.
Yeah.
Not just in Chicago, but people around here thought, well, there's nothing we can do anyway. So why should we, you know, it's a joke. Let's make some, have some fun about it. Hopefully it'll get somebody thinking, but probably not. And unfortunately, they were probably right, because people say, I remember Forgottonia, but which is kind of odd in itself, but it didn't really change anything. If you've seen the, there's another map of Illinois out. It has Chicago, and then the north central part added to Iowa, and the west central part added to Missouri, and the eastern central part added to, I believe, Indiana. You know, and maybe a small part of the southern section added to, you know, wherever. But that's how people are talking about. Things haven't changed. And so there are still people who say, let's just pull out of it. Let's create a 51st or 52nd state, depending on what they want to do with Puerto Rico. But, you know, it hasn't changed.
But did the experiment work?
Depends on who you ask, I suppose. Let's get Larry's insight first.
The fact that you're having to ask people what Fargatonia is.
Yeah.
People have heard about it, and yeah, that was kind of funny. And,
yeah,
you know, it was a publicity stunt. But as far as really making any kind of difference, it didn't. I just remember it happening. See, that's another thing. It didn't really accomplish anything. It was a nice little soundbite. It was a tidbit. It was, for a while, there were people, you know, various news organizations coming to talk about it. But it was like, you know, okay, this, you know, here we have a dog bites man, you know, now it's a man bites dog, and so that's funny, haha. But, you know, wow, they had a three-headed calf born here. Okay, let's do that, and okay, let's move on to something else. That's all it was.
Okay, let's for a second make the case that yes, the Fargatonia experiment worked. Let's present an argument both for and against the success or failure of the initial Fargatonia movement.
Well, for starters, the majority of people you asked today who do remember agree with Larry and believe it didn't work. People were ignored and construction of highways wasn't happening. Building these freeways was for many the heart of the Fargatonia movement. The 15 minutes of fame slowly began to fade for Neil Gann, and he eventually moved out of state for work and didn't return for another 30 years.
No movement is without its critiques either. Don Nicholson, the mayor of Quincy, Illinois, in Adams County, is the largest city in Fargatonia, by the way. Neil Gann was making fun of people from small towns. He said they were making fun of our counties looking bad. He was embarrassed.
It's worth mentioning, however, that Quincy was one of the few towns in Fargatonia that was experiencing growth in population as well as their economy. This perhaps is some window into why they were not quick to endorse the movement.
But for the yes side, in 1972, with a partial funding from the Illinois Department of Transportation, the Amtrak train began running through the heart of Fargatonia, connecting Quincy to Chicago. Highway construction did eventually begin in the 1980s and continues today.
The best argument as to why Fargatonia did not fail is seen in Gam's own words not long before he passed away. Gam and the Fargatonia movement provided rural Americans the ability to give voice to the pain and hardship people experienced. Folks genuinely felt ignored, and although it started out as a joke, Gam began to sense they were tapping into a deep sense of pain. Maybe they didn't realize it at the time, but Neil Gam and the other founders of Fargatonia became the voice for rural Americans.
And he was not deaf to the criticism he received about embarrassing rural residents. Gam's response was that people weren't embarrassed. They simply wanted to be noticed and hopefully catch a break.
In a 2010 interview with McDonough County, Neil Gam was quoted as saying, "I was just in it to be funny, and then I saw that people had legit concerns and they had nobody to talk to about it. It really got to be kind of a responsibility. That was kind of what kept it going. There were people who were plumb serious and not able to get their message out there, and I can at least do that for them." So exactly what can we learn from all this? What is the legacy of the Fargatonia movement, and how did the problems they faced compare with the problems we see today?
According to Eskridge, the legacy of Fargatonia can be seen in the election of 2016, when the forgotten man's voice was heard loud and clear.
It really is who the people voted for Trump. They say, okay, we've spent all this time paying our taxes, serving in the army, doing the things the government required, and yet all the help is going to either the, you know, the low end, the welfare, Social Security, kind of, you know, that kind of stuff, or the upper crust, you know, the rich, wealthy people. And so we're the ones who have been forgotten. It's not a new thing, the moral majority or the silent majority or whoever. These are the people who always do the work and yet get shoved away. And they are right to be upset. The whole idea is that there is only so much to go around. We're the ones providing it, but yet we get almost nothing there. And yeah, the welfare people are getting a tiny chunk of it, but we're the ones paying for it. So why are we getting nothing? Everything you talk about is, you know, well, this group or that group. What about the group that actually produces this? Two-thirds of the economy is working class, middle class people. And what do they do for us? They close our stores in Canton and in all these other places. We get nothing, but yet we're told we're the reason that the country, you know, and it's not necessarily the truth. We're the ones getting shortchanged.
There might not be a historical marker to honor the legacy of Fort Gatonia, but there is a barn near the town Avon, Illinois, that still proudly supports the Fort Gatonia USA banner. You can also hear the legacy of Fort Gatonia each time Illinois politicians use the term to represent rural regions that are often too ignored.
Unfortunately, another legacy of Fort Gatonia is that many of the problems they faced have indeed amplified today. Bill Knight, a retired WIU journalism professor, feels Fort Gatonia suffers from traits hitting much of rural America, a population that's older and also declining as fast as the median household income. Killing major employers and cultural centers that attract and keep younger residents kicks these areas while they're down. So, as times in western Illinois become more difficult, as people claim they are once more forgotten, is it time for the Fort Gatonia movement to reawaken?
Gam thinks so. In his final interview, shortly before passing away in 2012, he said we are ripe for a new movement that should focus more on job creation instead of transportation. Eskridge believes technology is impacting jobs in a big way today. He also says people in Fort Gatonia are still trying to find their voice.
Ultimately, lack of a voice. Nobody's listening. There's no sense of ownership anymore. We support the government, but the government doesn't care about us. The same can be said about Fort Gatonia voters, Trump voters. They say they care about us until after the election, and then they put all these things in that take away our jobs, that make us pay more taxes, but don't give us anything, and they cut our programs. There's a C.S. Lewis quote from Screwtape Letters, which is, the economy of hell rests on one very basic idea, that if I gain something, somebody else has to lose. That is the kind of feeling that almost everybody has now. If somebody else, welfare people, big businessmen, whatever, if they gain something, they're taking it away from me. I want to stop them taking away from me. The Reagan idea that the rising tide lifts all boats. We know that's not true. The tide is rising. We're not rising with it. We're getting drowned. But nobody cares. And the people with the loudest and most violent demonstrations are the ones they're paying attention to. The news media. Fort Gatonia was cute. It was funny. But it's not taken seriously. We are not taking seriously. What I would really like to see, if you remember Ayn Rand's Atlas Shrugged, where all the smart business people, you know, all they said, okay, screw it, you've lived off us too long, we're going to go away. And you see how you... I wish the middle class, working class, all races, would do that. Okay, you think you can run this, whatever her name was, I can run this railroad and I don't need any of you people. Okay. You run all this stuff without the workers, without, you know. Trouble is, like the Industrial Revolution, robots are doing all this work. And we are starting to get rid of, you know, why should we care? We can make more money with one store in Chicago than we can with all these JCPenney stores in the other places. And if you're not on the internet, too bad.
And what is perhaps the most, shall I say, forgotten legacy of Neil Gaiman, and what I believe is the true genius of the movement, is his use of humor. When most discontented citizens call politicians or show up at a march to voice their discontentment, Neil Gaiman went a different, more creative route that proved to be effective. He used humor. In his own words, he said, "You can malign, humiliate, and scream at your politicians, and it won't bother them a bit. But you laugh at them, and they can't stand it." That's what we were doing, and we were really good at it.
I guess in an age where politicians are extremely divided, perhaps a spark of humor, like the one Neil Gaiman provided in 1971, is that it takes to bring people together. Larry also commented on this when he asked him if he had any advice for those of us growing up in Fort Gatonia today.
If you talk to or study the great comedians, and I'm talking way back in the Greeks, to Lenny Bruce, to George Carlin, to Saturday Night Live, to Trevor Noah and Maher and all these other joke newscasters, they will tell you that the best way to get to somebody to see something that they don't want to see is to make fun of it. And that's what he was doing. But what happens when you suddenly realize, oh crap, that really is something. We gotta worry about that. If you read enough history, you find out that the people who seem to be the ones that are forgotten end up being the ones that keep history moving. The people who do the work, what we're doing around here is the real stuff. But that's kind of out of our control. What we have to do is, what can we do now? Are they going to forget me? Okay. As a 63-year-old person, I'm starting to think, okay, my life is coming to the close. I'm going to start writing what I want, the way I want, living my life the way I want, and you know what? If somebody doesn't like it, too bad. It's not up to me to decide how people decide what I'm like, you know. Stop worrying about, oh, I'm just in this Forgotonia, whatever. Live your life for you, for the right things. If you're forgotten, that's okay. But the big picture, my final literary reference, Man for All Seasons. Thomas More is trying to get this one person who's trying to move up in the government to go into teaching. And he says, if I go into teaching, who will know me? And Thomas More goes, you know, if I'm a good teacher, so what? Who cares? He says, you will, your students, God. That's not a bad public. Remember who you're doing it for. Do it for yourself. Do it for the causes you believe in. Do it for the people around you. Will you end up being forgotten? Maybe. But you know what? You might influence somebody, you know.
So hey, Avonlea, my co-host, what did you think of the first show? Let's recap a little bit and share what we learned.
I learned about Neil Gaiman and the founders of Fort Gatonia, that their movement was primarily based on roads, and if we had a new movement in Fort Gatonia today, it should be based on jobs.
I enjoyed hearing Larry's thoughts about rural America and the legacy of Fort Gatonia. There's an interesting argument whether or not people think it did anything to make a difference.
I learned that there's no plaque or movement or anything to remember Fort Gatonia. There's just a banner painted on a barn in a small town. There's really not much out there to remember it.
That's a good point, but I like how this blog in Quincy, Illinois called Q-Town describes Fort Gatonia and how it should be remembered. Let's give them the last word. Perhaps the Fort Gatonia movement is best remembered and shared through random stories passed on each time, serving as a near-forgotten gem of how a group of people can evoke positive change. The kind of fuzzy, detailed story that becomes a legend as it makes its way down the roads of time. Thanks for listening, and please join us next time on Fort Gatonia.